country was because there were people who were there every day, whether it was a civil rights issue, a labor rights issue, organizing, anything else. They were there, ready to turn the mimeograph machines, no internet, organize demonstrations. They had a memory, you know, the movement had a memory, which it doesn't have now. Now everyone starts over from fresh. But it had a kind of a tradition, a memory that people were always there. If you look back, it was very heavily Communist Party activists. Well, you know, that was destroyed. And that's one of the lack of such a sector of dedicated, committed people who understand that you're not going to win tomorrow. You know, you're going to have a lot of defeats, and there'll be a lot of trouble, you know, and a lot of things will happen to you that aren't nice. But if you keep at it, you can get somewhere. And that's why we have had a civil rights movement and a labor movement and so on. And, the lesson that we ought to learn, there was a split in American public opinion, very sharp split, very visible in the early 70s, between elite opinion, you know, newspapers, Harvard faculty, and so on the one hand, and the general population on the other, not the anti-war movement, the general population. In elite opinion, articulate opinion, and that you can read, so it's easy to document, the most extreme condemnation of the war was that it was a mistake which proved to be too costly. Okay, that's about as far as you can go. Among the public, about 70% in polls said it's not a mistake, it's fundamentally wrong and immoral. Okay, it's a very sharp and significant split, and I think the lesson we'll learn is to bring it to today, that say when Obama is praised for opposing the war in Iraq because he thought it was a mistake, we should recognize that to be on a par with you know, Nazi generals after Stalingrad who thought that the two-front war was a mistake. The issue isn't whether it was a mistake. It's whether it's fundamentally wrong and immoral. Well, that's the lesson that has to be drawn. That's what the public probably already understands, but we have to do something with and organize with.
Just say one thing. There's this quote that I've been trying to find out who said it. I think back on my life over all the times I thought I went too far, and I realize now I didn't go far enough. I don't think Noam Chomsky said that.
World-renowned linguist and dissident Noam Chomsky, speaking at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts, at an event sponsored by the Harvard Extension International Relations Club. Oh, about 800 people packed Memorial Church. If you'd like a copy of today's program, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Special thanks to Ray Boyer. Democracy Now! Is hiring an online outreach and communications manager. We're looking for an experienced online strategist to help us reach the widest possible online audience. Visit democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Shruf Adokadu, Sarah Mate, Anjali Kamat, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Mike DeFilippo, Peter Curries, Miguel Nogueira, our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Nick Gillick, Hugh Grant, Samantha Chambly, Jessel Noor, Vesta Godars, Julie Crosby, Karen Ranucci. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Coming up next, it's More Talk Radio. Today's hosts, Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott, speak with Mary Fetch, TriMet Communications Director, and Carrie Aries Palank from the TriMet Service Planning Staff about some new proposed cuts in TriMet services, including reduced hours of operation, a 5-cent fare increase, and an internal salary and hiring freeze.
March 24th is Dine Out for KBOO Night. The following local restaurants will be giving 10% proceeds to KBOO: Biwa at 215 Southeast 9th Avenue, Laurelhurst Market at 3155 East Burnside, Old Wives' Tales at 1300 East Burnside, Il Piatto at 2348 Southeast Ankeny, Olé Olé at 2137 East Burnside, Ron Tom's at 600 East Burnside, and Tapalaya at 28 Northeast 28th Avenue. That's Dine Out for KBOO Night, March 24th. You can find more information at kboo.fm/dineout. Support your local restaurants and help out your favorite community radio station, KBOO.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or grendelscoffee.com.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO Portland. My name is Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and we welcome you here to our community connection.
A reminder, daylight saving time began yesterday, so the time is 8:04 a.m.
If you think it's 8 o'clock, you're right. If you think it's 7, you're wrong, and you need to hurry.
So for those of you who are, made sure that your clocks were adjusted, and just take it easy. And those of you who are in a hurry, take it slow, too.
Well, take it carefully.
Carefully.
Yeah, take it carefully.
Not too slow.
Yeah.
Well, we thank you for joining us this morning. We will be talking about this morning with representatives from TriMet. And we invite your calls to participate in our morning conversation. Let me give you our phone numbers and our email address so that you might participate in our morning conversation. If you're calling, our numbers are 503-231-8187.
Okay. Absolutely. Look at you.
Well, I wasn't sure which. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, I share it. I do too.
Okay.
And especially Monday morning, dyslexia rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're on web, you can go to moretalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can actually hit us through our webpage at kboo.fm.
Excellent. And so we welcome your calls and your participation this morning. I would like to thank Norman, who is a listener, who suggested that we have this conversation this morning. And thank you, Norman, for your suggestions and also for some of your questions that We will share with the representatives from KBOO, from TriMet this morning. Again, if you have other questions or if you have other concerns, please join in our conversation either by phone or by email. Let's begin our conversation by introducing our guest this morning. Joining us are, I know I'm going to botch your name, so I'm going to have you introduce yourselves again.
I'm Mary Fetch. I'm the communications director at TriMet, and I'm going to toss it over to Carrie.
I'm Carrie Ayers-Palanuk, the service planning manager.
Excellent. Well, I kind of have an idea what communication director is. Service planning manager, you know, briefly, what is that?
We are the ones who look at where the routes should go, how often they should go, where they should go. We look at a lot of data that we have from the buses.
So like you're sitting in front of computers and seeing where the lines are going and how often people get traffic routes and neighborhoods?
Well, we get requests, I guess, from citizens or from jurisdictions, and maybe they'd like to have service. And so we would check out what the area is like, look at data that we have from there, what's the population and employment, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. We look at the data from the buses that tells us how many people are riding. Are there a lot of people? Are there a lot of people likely to ride or not?
Yes.
That sort of thing.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. And Mary, your job entails?
It really is just taking a very complex organization and trying to communicate it to the public, to riders, different things like that. We have over 300,000 trips a day taken on our system. So, you know, we want to make sure we're communicating well with our riders. Now, that may be service changes. It may be a disruption in service. Maybe an event is happening like yesterday, the Shamrock Run. How does that impact riders at the various routes and such? And it's also to communicate just generally to the public, the media, you know, what is TriMet up to?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we should begin. I forgot to give a more formal introduction, and maybe we should begin by giving an explanation of what is TriMet. Some of our listeners are outside of the region, so could
That's great. TriMet is the technical term is a municipal corporation, whatever that means. It was created by the legislature back in 1969. We run transit service in the Tri-County area, so that's the three counties in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County. Much of that urbanized area. The area we cover is about 570 miles, square miles, that we provide service. We have light rail service, we have bus service, we have commuter rail, and we also have what we call service for people with disabilities, the door-to-door service. That term in the industry is called paratransit. It means we provide door-to-door service for people who can't ride regular service. They can't get to a bus stop. They can't navigate the system by themselves because of a disability. So those are all the different types of service we provide.
Excellent. Well, let's begin with some preliminary questions about TriMet. Certainly in the news most recently, many of us are aware of TriMet cuts in services, fare increases, and some of the changes that are happening with the organization. Are there things that you would like to inform the public just generally about where we are on those type of things?
Sure. Most of our funds to pay for service comes from the employer payroll tax. So depending on how many people are working and their salaries helps directly provide service that actually provides revenues for us to provide service. When we've seen this, high unemployment for such a long period of time, that takes money directly out of our budget and the opportunity to provide service. So as our hope is one day as this economy is coming back, we get to add service back. But because we're so directly tied to what's happening in the economy with our payroll tax receipts, that is affecting service. So this is our second year where the economy and the recession is just continuing to really batter our budget, if you will. So what we've had to do is look at things all across the agency. We wake up every day and go, what we do is provide service, and that's what we want to do. It's our mission. These are the toughest things we do because the last thing we want to do is touch service. So we've cut across the board. We've put hiring freezes in place, furloughs. We've laid people off. We've really had to do everything possible before we touch service so that we can make those impacts to our riders as small as possible. We've had cuts last year. We started with a $31 million budget hole and ended up cutting service. This year we're in about a $27 million hole and looking to cut service. And so what we have out right now is we've had some open houses, got a lot of feedback from the public, and we're weighing those comments right now. We have two hearings coming up that is more formal conversation. We'll hear from folks as we decide, you know, what is the service we need to cut in order to balance our budget, which we're required to do by state law.
So let me ask a couple of questions about your budget structure, your income structure. How common is it for a large metropolitan area's transit system to be funded in that fashion?
Well, we are probably slightly unique because we rely so much on the payroll tax. But we're like transit districts across the entire country. They're doing this. A lot of the transit agencies are funded by sales tax. So with fewer people working, fewer people buying things, that's a revenue loss. So it's every transit district is around the country is cutting service. They're looking at like 25-cent fare increases. You know, New York's thinking of cutting a subway line and doing other things and cutting service to free passes to students and things like that. So, you know, this is around the country an issue where transit just isn't funded well with a regular source so that you don't have these ups and downs.
And what percentage of TriMet's revenue is funded that fashion? A very large chunk, I take it?
Yeah, for our operating revenues, 55% roughly comes from the payroll tax. Mm-hmm. And our riders, with the fares they pay, cover about 21%. So right there, you're about at, you know, 75%. So three quarters of funding comes from those two sources.
And what does the rest of that come from, that shortfall?
Oh, it's just a mix of different grants and things like that.
So basically what we're hearing is that you start off with a funding deficit.
Yes.
Okay. Has it always been that way, or is that something that's just kind of developed over time with shifts in population?
It's with employment.
And employment. Well, they go hand in hand.
Yes. Well, you can have people live here who aren't.
Ooh, yeah. True.
You know, it's really, we have to have a balanced budget every year. But what we're seeing is obviously when we have good economic times, we're able to add service and do different things like that. Right now, we just have to make these tough choices about what is the service we can provide, especially to the folks who are transit dependent. They need to get to a job. They might have a disability, and it's the only way they can get to an appointment and such.
Speaking of that, in terms of availability of transit, it almost seems as if there's a catch-22 listening to what you said in terms of income dependent upon the level of employment and people who are transit dependent. I've heard or read that the increase in unemployment has led to, two things. One, a drop in your revenue. And second, less people riding TriMet. And I'm not sure how you figure this out, but if people are unemployed, they might also be more transit dependent, being unable to use their cars or if they have cars such as that. In terms of trying to figure out all these things, and I'm looking at you with the layout here, how do you determine in terms of looking at service lines and choices in terms of what lines are most important, what lines that you can cut back on some services? How does that process work?
And let me jump in there and kind of refine that, make it just a little bit smaller, especially given the fact that you've got population shifts. So we've got demographics of people who will be most likely to be pushed outside of the city now need some of those lines? How do you determine ridership and what lines you want to keep?
Well, I'll start and then I'll throw it to Carrie. We have what we call automatic passenger counters on all of our buses. What that means is that somebody boards, we know where they got on. We know if they used the lift. We know how many people get on and off at a stop. So when you think about 81 lines throughout the system, we know a lot about what our riders are doing and where they're going. So that helps to say, where's your ridership? How full are the buses? Some of the things we're talking about when we look at cuts is there room on the buses to be able to, if you take a bus out of rotation, can you actually have enough space for everybody if you combine a trip? Those sorts of things, because we have such good data. And we also look at, you know, what activities in the area. Carrie, what else would you add?
Well, I think generally what we're looking at is just what Mary was talking about. Are there a lot of people riding it, or are there very few people riding it? So low ridership is one of the first things we look at. And also, do they have alternative service as far as cutting lines? So that's one of the important things. So we have that data on how many people are riding. But then we also, like Mary mentioned earlier, going out and having these open houses. And so people can come and talk to us and tell us, you know, how do they use it? Why do they use it? What would they do if the bus weren't there? And then people can call in or email us and let us know how this is going to affect their lives. So we take all of that into account when we look at what the final proposal for the service cuts will be.
That's some pretty sophisticated counting. Now, given the fact that I've ridden myself, how exactly do you account for each passenger? Because I've noticed you've got a combination of fare payments. Anyone may have a paper transfer, they may have the bus pass, they may pay change, they may have bus tickets. So how do you actually count the person and then know where they get on and get off?
So we have automatic passenger counters. And so what happens is as you step on the bus, mm-hmm. your feet, it's a, what do you call it, an eye or something
yeah.
that is
so
that
like
is
a motion
broken.
Detector.
Yeah, thank mm-hmm. you. Yeah, something like that, an electric eye. And so it knows when you're stepping on, and then there's another one for when you're stepping off.
Okay.
And so we have counts at each bus stop for each bus.
And then what you do is you actually count a physical presence.
Correct.
Okay, not necessarily the payment. And so this is
correct.
This is a little bit of more foolproof fashion, I guess. Okay.
That's right. And, you know, more than half of our riders have passes.
Right.
So, you know, when you're boarding a MAX train, how do you know who has a pass and who has a ticket in their pocket? So, yeah, so it's done by these automatic passenger counters, which is a little more reliable than just on the fare, because a lot of folks don't have to show a fare unless asked by a fare inspector.
Okay. Our numbers, you're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio. This is Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and we're here discussing the changes to TriMet's routes and ridership. And if you have questions about the changes in routes or comments, you can call in at 503-231-8187 and share your thoughts. Or you can also hit us online. You can find us either at moretalkradio, that's one word, at gmail.com. Or you can find us at the KBOO website and send us your questions or comments electronically. I'm here at the keyboard.
I have a couple of questions that a listener has shared with us, and I thought I would begin with those. He writes, I would appreciate having the question posed as to why there seems such a willingness and capability of spending relatively astronomical amounts of money on the light rail and the luxury of streetcar editions, but seemingly at the expense of the buses and those served by the bus lines. That's something I often hear in terms of the desire for streetcars and light rail. And related to that, what's the commuter train? West.
West, yeah. So I guess I'd start with you know, we get this question asked a lot because here you are in a position of having to cut service, and yet you're just opened the Green Line recently. You're planning the Portland-Milwaukee Light Rail Line. The streetcar is a City of Portland project. We don't put any funds into that to build it, so I'll just set that to the side. Okay. We help fund some of the operation of it. When you think of most of the funds for those big projects come from the federal government and also regional partners. So when you think about the Portland-Milwaukee line that we will open in like 2015, it's about $1.4 billion project. TriMet's only putting $30 million in, and it's we're not putting that money in today because we're still in the planning phase. We're doing that in the future. Mm-hmm. And it really is about the future. You know, we're in the toughest economic recession since the Great Depression. And, you know, who would have ever thought this when you look back a few years ago and such? So, you know, we still have to plan for our future. We still have 1 million people coming to this region. We still want livability. We still want mobility. We still want vibrant neighborhoods. You have to invest in those with good transportation. So even though it's kind of a mixed message about, well, gee, why don't you just stop those projects? Mm-hmm. Most of the funds come from the federal government and our regional partners. So they're moving, if I can say, without too much of a pun, they're on their own track, if you will. We think you need all the transit you can get. You need buses to serve the community, the neighborhoods. Light rail is our high capacity. You know, when you think about a 52-mile system we have now, Hillsborough serves all three counties, goes to Gresham, serves all these areas with high-capacity transit. Then when you think of the West Commuter Rail, it's the state's first commuter rail line. Obviously, it's the one of a kind. It only serves a suburb-to-suburb community. When you think about commuter rail systems around the country, it's usually, you know, back suburban to urban, and they tie into a very big system. So this is a different kind of model. It's our first. It is actually the very fast travel time between Wilsonville and Beaverton. That's a real tough corridor to serve by buses, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's really good in that way. It's an expensive service. Starter lines tend to be more expensive because they're, you know, as you build, you attract more riders. And the other thing is ridership's a little low. So, you know, it's a service, is how we think about it, is for the future, you know. Mm. What more capacity are we going to have in that area to add other stuff?
Well, one of the things I think about commuter rail and also light rail is there less flexibility. When you lay down the tracks, they have to go there. With buses, you have somewhat more flexibility. Could you share something about the philosophy, why light rail as opposed to bus routes?
Well, again, we think you need both. Where light rail works well is in those high travel corridors. When you think of the Green Line that we just opened between Clackamas Town Center, let's just take the portion along 205 between Clackamas Town Center and Gateway Transit Center. That much of it was built in an existing transit way that they set aside when they built the highway there. And when you think about that area as a very transit-dependent area, we're seeing very strong ridership, good travel times. Developers like the permanence of rail for that. They're going to build multi-million-dollar buildings, residential or a business. They like the permanence of rail. The role of buses is really to serve those neighborhoods, and as they change and shift, that can also feed into the system. We're actually seeing the Line 72 was one of our most busiest bus lines, and that's the one that used to go from North Portland. Well, it still does. It goes from North Portland out to Clackamas Town Center on 82nd Avenue. And because we opened the Green Line, we're now seeing a lot of people have shifted. Now, the Green Line is basically 92nd Avenue when you think about the freeway, and it used to run on 82nd. So all those folks who maybe didn't want to walk all the way to 82nd are now walking to the max. We're seeing good ridership. We're actually seeing less on the 72, and we're looking at adjusting the schedule to really match the ridership. So when you think about it, you need all of it to help get people around.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. And we're speaking here with Mary and Carrie from TriMet regarding TriMet ridership changes and bus route changes. Join in the conversation. Ask questions about your bus line, about input on how the changes are made, or just any question you have that's very relevant to how we serve our transportation needs here in Portland. 503-231-8187. And we have Joanne online, and we'll go to her. Good morning.
Yes, hello, TriMet people. You know, I've been forced because of low income, a fixed income, and no real people support my life to have only use public transportation. And thank God it's in Multnomah County, Portland. But here's what I see. I know I'm a one person, and my view, it's like the last several years, even when I look when I go to Winco, one of them in Northeast and one in Southeast, and even on Sundays, I look at all the vehicles there in the parking lot for Winco, and I look out on Powell during the week, all the traffic, and Southeast 39th and that, and my, okay, one person, but is it real? It looks like hardly anybody rides public transportation, just from my one person view. Anyway, I want to say a lot more, but it's not going to do any good. But I say again, even you know, I'd be real hopeless and depressed if I didn't have public transportation where I'm, and it means a lot to me. You know, like everything else, it's imperfect. But I want to ask one question: the Lyft. The Lyft in Multnomah County, is it owned by TriMet or is it owned by a lot of private companies? Thanks for being on the air.
All right. Thank you for your
help. Thank you, Joanne.
Thanks, Joanne. A couple things. The Lyft is we operate the service through a contract service. It's TriMet oversees the program where we go door to door to provide that service. The other question is, you know, thank you for writing and, you know, we love that we are a public service. You know, we have riders that choose to ride us. They want to keep their car at home and they don't want to have to drive or pay for gas or parking and things like that. But then there's that other portion of our population here that's depends. It's how they get to the doctor. It's how they get to jobs. It's how they get to church. I mean, it's really about everyday life, every single day that they do it on transit. And we understand that. And really, as we look at how we operate every day, you know, we want to know how people use the service. As Carrie said earlier, we really want to understand that. And we really we do understand that this is what people depend on. It's their livelihood. It gets them connected to their community. So we really appreciate you writing, Joanne.
Before we go to our next caller, in terms of having people writing and as time develop routes change and things like that. One thing that I noticed that you don't have currently, which may impact people who have different work schedules, is this used to be something like the owl bus service.
Night owl.
Right.
Night owl. You've been around a while.
Late service.
A lot of folks, there's a group of folks out there who remember the night owl service.
Yeah. Well, also, both of us come from larger metropolitan areas where you had late night service or 24-hour service.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
At least, yeah, well, you know, thinking that you've got people who kind of need to get to work makes it a little more convenient.
That's right, at 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning. And,
right.
Yeah.
So, what about that as an option? And then I also have another question, too, before we go to the caller.
So the night owl service really is a low ridership, expensive service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had a 24-hour city where, you know, you could have the service overnight? It's really, we run about, on the light rail, about 22 hours a day, roughly. The buses are, you know, a lot of folks working in the restaurants and that industry and getting off at 1-2 in the morning, you know, that's mm-hmm. tough. So we just don't have the resources for that. The ridership would be low, but it's an important audience that we're aware of.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and we do have a caller online. I'll hold my question. Good morning, John.
Hi. Hey, I had a question about the funding of TriMet compared with other transit organizations in other cities across the country. You mentioned that one of the biggest issues is that it's tied to income tax. Are there other cities, other organizations that have a better structure, and is it possible for us to work toward that, where we had a more stable funding?
That's a great question, John, and I want to piggyback mine because it's related to it. Since you have said that developers are also fond of the permanence and the convenience of light rail for their property values, is there any movement toward having some contribution by developers and development, you know, to support that light rail?
Good questions. Let's take the Portland Mall project, which was part of the Green Line when we just recently finished construction. Some of the business, the property owners along downtown Portland helped contribute to the project. They taxed themselves for it, which is, you know, they really understood the value of light rail and that contribution. So there's that model. A stable funding source, wouldn't that be fabulous, that was sort of recession-proof? Wouldn't that be great? Now, there's not a lot of operating assistance when you look at transit systems across the country that are dedicated to that. Now, obviously, you could, if you add a sales tax, people say, oh, why don't we just add another half a cent to the sales tax, and then we'll expand transit and do that sort of thing. So it's something that every transit district across the country would like to have a stable source. Now, what they tend to do is have a source for construction. I think it's Sound Transit up in Seattle area. The voters up there recently approved an increase to build and expand their system. So a lot of times you have you find the money through special dedications of a sales tax or an election, and maybe it's property taxes, depending on. And that goes to building a new line. The problem is, what happens when you have to operate it? You know, where's that dedicated source? So it's really a conundrum that every transit district faces. There is no true dedicated source that helps to grow and expand. We've increased the payroll tax rate that employers pay to help with more operations. But
what is, as the caller suggested, looking at different revenue streams? For example, in his recent State of the City address, our mayor, Sam Adams, says, you know, we should be looking at how our transportation can serve people. And then if you're getting stimulus money for projects or federal money for things like the streetcar, what would it take to have more support through either city funding or, as I said, developers through various taxes to support this effort? Because it's a win-win situation for these developers. The reason they're getting such a high dollar for whatever they build is because there's transportation built right in. I mean, all one has to do is go out Burnside or go up and down, you know, our new rails and see all the development that's being planned right there.
Well, I think the employers, the developers, they're paying through their salaries of their employees. The other thing also is that they have supported actually expanding the payroll tax rate and increasing it so that we can expand service and pay for more service. So they've said, yes, we'll tax ourselves more to help pay for more service. Obviously, we would like we'd like more operating funds as well. You know, as far as the federal stimulus dollars, we have gotten federal stimulus dollars to really sort of jumpstart some projects that really help deal with the infrastructure of our system. Mm-hmm. Like we're fixing, you know, things like related to the rail system, heated switches, so during bad weather we can operate more reliably, things like that. The stimulus funds are one-time only type funds. They're not going to solve an ongoing operating need, but they are helping to build the system more robust. We're building a facility out in the Washington County area. It's a new fuel and wash facility. That may seem like, well, why are you doing that? Well, it's a 30-year-old building that is almost ready to be blown over in a good windstorm. Mm-hmm. And every day we fuel and wash over 100 buses in that every single day. And, you know, so we need to upgrade that system. And so those are what the stimulus funds are for, really targeted at making our infrastructure strong and robust, putting people to work at the same time.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. We're speaking this morning with representatives from TriMet. We have people who have called in and also people who have emailed us with questions. And let's proceed with some of those. How do you want to proceed with the callers or the email?
Well, let's get the callers because I can squeeze the email in really quickly.
Okay. We'll go to our next caller. Good morning.
Hello?
Yes.
That's you. Good morning.
Yes, this is Stephen from Hillsboro.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning. Now, since I'm from Hillsboro, as you know, Washington County lost a lot of bus service in September, and that's been a grave inconvenience for me. But I understand the situation. I'll tell you, my biggest complaint is not the loss of service. I hope it won't get any worse in this next round. But what really has a negative impact on me is this. About 5-6 years ago, TriMet announced that it was going to post schedules at every bus stop.
Yes.
And it proceeded to do this at an extremely tedious pace. But up until last year, we riders could feel that if we were patient, sooner or later, schedules would be posted at each bus stop. Beginning last year and proceeding now much more enthusiastically than the process, the earlier process of putting up the schedules, you are now taking down schedules wherever they have been posted and substituting pseudo-schedules, uninformative things with a lot of blank space on them that at the most will give you information such as this bus runs every 15 minutes or better during the day, but doesn't define what during the day means. And now, please don't tell me about the transit tracker system with the cell phone. That will require me to give you four sufficient reasons why some people don't want to carry a cell phone, all four of which apply to me. Okay. If you ever try to figure out how to make connections, I know TriMet is not big on connections, from the kind of information we're being given now, it's hopeless.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Stephen.
So a couple things. I don't know if Stephen, obviously he's not interested in carrying a cell phone, which I understand.
Well, everybody's not able.
That's right. There's other options.
Right.
So we have roughly 7,100 bus stops, and there is a code for every one of those bus stops that you could go to a computer. If you didn't have a computer, you can go to the library. You can find out what is the number of that bus stop right there, and you could look at the frequency. We tend to make adjustments in schedules about four times a year. So having a schedule that might be adjusted 2 to 4 minutes, maybe more, every 3 months to go out and post a new schedule was expensive, not very reliable. So what is an option if you didn't want to call up and just check what time your bus is coming? You can also do it on the computer. You can even call our 238 ride, our call takers Monday through Friday, who could help you answer questions. You're right, because not everybody has a cell phone and wants to be at the stop and call up and say, when's our arrival time?
Well, even that's not, I have to say now, during September, I took the bike rider challenge. So I rode my bike for the entire month of September.
Good for you.
The challenge, though, was when I would need to make those connections by bus. Mm-hmm. Now, the ease of getting the bike on and off was good. However, the transit tracker by bus for some stops was non-existent because you could literally be at stops where you could not get any information. So I could kind of sympathize with mm-hmm. Stephen's plight mm-hmm. because if you're low-tech, you're getting even less information. And one of my biggest concerns with the way we're shifting our transportation focus is there seems to be less of an emphasis on what I'll call transportation equity. In other words, making sure that even the least of us have access to, you know, as I said, it seems like some of the ridership, and I understand that you do count riders, but some of the ridership is being decreased in areas where people will need it the most because they're low-income people. They've been pushed out of the core of the city. And then also, you've got stimulus money giving you jobs, but some of those jobs are in places where only transportation might be TriMet. And if you don't have a car, how do you get to your job?
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting catch-22 I see developing as we have holes being designed into the system, which are going to lose people.
Yes. You know, a couple of things. When we have cut service back, in addition to the job losses in the region, obviously that some of that transit service doesn't work for some of the riders. So we're seeing that there's less service for people to access and make those connections. That's very true. The other thing is many of our busiest routes, we call our frequent service lines. Before these budget cuts, it was at least every 15 minutes, 7 days a week, most hours of the day. Real commitment. Those are the most of those lines serve the communities of low income, people of color, the real transit dependent when you think of like the line 4 coming from North Portland that goes all the way out to Gresham with high frequency, the 72, those sorts of things. So we are really committed. When we look at all the service cuts, we also we count people, but we also count what's the community. Is it a community of transit dependent? Is it a low income? Do they need to get to jobs? Those sorts of things. So that is all taken into account as we have to make these tough choices because, you know, our goal is not to take the bus away so people can't get to jobs. We want to connect people.
You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil. I'm here with my co-host Celeste. Our guests here are representatives of TriMet. We invite your calls and emails. But coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. That topic is solar and wind, the energy future. The MO shows how it is now technically and economically feasible to replace all nuclear, coal, and oil electricity production. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we will hear an interview with Wes Jackson, founder of the Land Institute, author and a leader in the international sustainable agriculture movement. At 10:15, Local Focus looks at climate change impacts on the Southern Oregon watershed with Brian Barr of the National Center for Conservation, Science, and Policy. At 11 on Health Watch, the guest is Ethan Waters, author of Crazy Like Us, The Globalization of the American Psyche. All of this here on your KBOO radio station. But in the meantime, continuing our conversation with Representatives Mary and Carrie from TriMet, we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a concern about your bus stops. You advertise at your bus stops, so you can only see what's coming one way. I do appreciate the shelters. I just don't think there should be advertising on one side.
There's advertisement, and you can't see the bus, and there's also safety concerns around that.
That's why we only put the advertising and the signage on one side, so that...
But you're not hearing me, though.
Okay, could you clarify?
Yes. If you're sitting there and something is going on one side, you can't see it coming towards you. Mm-hmm. Your advertising does nothing for my safety.
That's right. That would require you to stand up and just walk to the edge of the shelter and look out to see, is the bus coming? That sort of idea. We do have a policy where we have it. Carrie, why don't you add to that, since you're a little more familiar with all the bus stops and such?
Well, all I just wanted to say was that usually the advertising is downstream, if you will, from where the bus is coming. So you can still see the bus, but I don't think that talks to the safety issue from the other direction.
That's
but at least you can see the bus coming.
Yes.
We do make sure we do that.
Okay. And, you know, unfortunately, some folks say, well, we'd like you not to have any advertising. Well, we get probably a little over $4 million a year from advertising, which certainly helps offset impacts to riders, fares, and revenues and things like that. So it's actually a revenue source that helps with our budget. But I'm glad to hear that we do keep the visual eye of the approaching bus clear.
Okay. Well, thank you, caller.
Thank you.
We'll go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. How are you today?
Hi. Good. Thank you. So my question is, I've been a rider of mass transit for a long time, and I've been supporting it, and I'm wondering... how much do you think that ridership is down due to negative experiences with the employees of TriMet, particularly fare inspectors, kind of the heavy-handed approaches, and most recently the Brittany Moore case? I think people are feeling pretty fearful about those interactions, especially with letting their kids go on. And I'm just wondering if the community support is going down, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
I'm not sure the Brittany Moore case, which one that is. We're not hearing that.
That might be incident with a youngster and the police and okay. the TriMet
platform. Oh, that's
platform.
A juvenile, so I don't know her name, so that might have been. You know, we're not hearing that from our writers, so, you know, that's an interesting comment from the listener. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, it's just it hasn't, I'm not hearing much of that at all. Our focus is make sure we have enough eyes and ears on the system so people feel safe and mm-hmm. comfortable. Fare inspectors ride throughout the day, evening, weekends, just randomly. So you never know when you have to have a fare, so it's a good idea to have a fare. So, you know, we haven't heard that. Our sense is for everybody that is working is customer service is number one important. Obviously, someone's safety is too. But it's really that sense of we're glad you're here. We want you to have a comfortable ride, a safe ride, a reliable ride.
With regard to rides, that's one of the our people riding on with from TriMet. One of the questions we have online here is that this concerns about whether those who decide the bus schedules, routes, and frequency actually ride the buses themselves to see what it's like to make transfers, to wait in the rain or the cold, to look at shelter safety, for example. And then, you know, if they do, where do we see these changes made? Is there any sharing of this information, any kind of public dialogue?
Carrie, how about you start with that, some of that?
Well, certainly our staff in service planning rides the bus a lot. We do go out and look. We ride the bus to see, is the time correct? And so, yeah, we are out on the system. As far as transfers, let me just mention that the schedule riders do what they can to make transfers work at potentially like transit centers. And, you know, everybody would like to have their mm-hmm. transfer work really well, but they can't make it work at every location. They do kind of
at the busier places.
Right, have the priority as the transit centers and, yeah, the busier locations.
And so when we look at our schedules every 3 months, we look at adjusting schedules. We look at how are those transfers working out. If you're continually seeing a bus line that's late and the transfers aren't working, they will adjust the schedules to make those transfers work better. And so that's all we evaluate. We get rider feedback. The driver can give us information that says, I'm not making these transfers work for folks because I'm always stuck. So we need to adjust the schedule. So we really look at that constantly to say, is it a one time? Was it a traffic accident that sort of held the bus up? Or is it something every day it's chronic? We're not getting that bus there on time to make that transfer. So we need to adjust schedules so that people can make those transfers because we know that's so important.
And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, caller. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello,
hello,
you're on the air.
Is that me?
That's you.
Yes, that's
I'm
you.
Sorry.
Hi. So I live off of Alberta Street, and I work out in Troutdale. So I take the 72 to the 77, or when I'm riding my bike, I bike down to the Hollywood Transit Center and then put my bike on the MAX and finish the rest of the commute. But I would offer some feedback that it would be really awesome to have more space for bikes on the front of the bus or mm-hmm. on the MAX, because I ride with my partner, and sometimes if there's one bike, then we'll take separate buses, or maybe one of us will, you know, do a little bit more biking. But I just think sometimes it's just not enough room for bikes for people that want to not rely on their cars so much but can't really feasibly bike the whole way.
That's a really good question. I'm a big bike rider, too, so I totally understand. There's a couple things. Right now, on every bus, there's space for two bikes. And as the caller said, sometimes the bike is already there and you have two bikes, so you have to wait for the next bus. You know, as we see more and more cyclists ride in this region and use transit so they can actually get further, we are seeing that that's a tough thing. there's only the capacity for two bikes. The industry was looking at having a three-bike rack in the front of the bus. Some of the bikes were falling off, and so they haven't got that one down yet. But we do realize that we sure would like to have more capacity on the bus. Obviously, during MAX, especially at rush hour, trains are full, the bike racks are full, and so it's really tough to really depend on MAX during a rush hour. It sounds like you're going sort of the reverse commute, so you probably always have space on the MAX train to put your bike up during most hours. But, you know, there's just so many people that want to ride. There's not always the capacity on the system.
Yeah. Usually there's space. I mean, sometimes I just think if the hooks were even longer and you could put two and you could put eight.
Yes, two or redesign them and put them in a different direction so you could line them up.
People are willing to communicate with each other to say, oh, I have to get my bike down or, you know, we could work it out.
Yeah, we've found, I take my bike every now on MAX, and I found the riders to be really great if they're standing in the area where you have the bike hook. And it's like, hey, can I squeeze in here? And they're very, I've always found it a good interaction to have folks kind of step aside and allow you to get your bike on. Because, you know, bikes are on every single train. It's not just during rush hour. People are using the bikes on the system all the time. So it's really encouraging. I think there's a lot of awareness out there that, you know, bikes are just as important as a stroller for, you know, for families that that people are using them.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Speaking about bikes, you mentioned strollers. Some of the things that we also, I've witnessed, I use TriMet all the time, is mothers with children with strollers and also people using mobility devices. Are there any thoughts in terms of making that more user-friendly for those two populations?
The entire system is accessible for people who use mobility devices. We have areas on the train where it's designed for to use for people with disabilities. Now, if somebody is happening to stand there, let's say a mother with a stroller is in that accessible area and somebody is boarding with a wheelchair, then that stroller the person with the stroller would need to move because the priority is for the person with disabilities. That's the priority space. It's called priority seating for that reason. Luckily on MAX, there's a lot of areas to stand, so it's easier to have those spaces available for that. But, you know, during events, I mean, I've ridden quite a few times, and there's almost as many strollers as there are people, you know, just standees and people sitting. So, you know, what it tells me is that people really use the service. There are people who need to get to appointments, get to doctors, go grocery shopping. I mean, these are folks who, this is how they get around, and they bring their kids with them, you know. And, you know, usually we don't have an issue, you know, during rush hour, trains are full. But I think riders are pretty understanding that a mom with a stroller, a person with a disability has the priority.
There have been at least two summits for transportation, some put on by community organizing groups, such as the recent one on transportation equity. And then I believe the mayor also had one just recently on transportation summit. And so there's a lot of public input coming in looking at larger aspects of transportation, how you design it overall. How is TriMet utilizing and addressing this input?
Well, we're glad we're at the table. We think there's really good input from the community about how they use the service, where they would like to see the service. You know, because when you think about, let's just say, for an example, a rail line, it's roughly 10 years from the concept to designing, building, opening. 10 years. So, you know, where are we as a community growing in the future? So those conversations are going on. Some folks are saying a rail line down Barber Boulevard to Tigard and to Sherwood is like the next priority line. People are also talking, how about we have an extension of the blue line out in Gresham and go to Mount Hood Community College? Wouldn't that be fabulous for all the students to be able to make that connection?
Or maybe in Cully, where there's a dearth of any kind of services.
Well, you have the 72 there, but yeah, and some sidewalks would be nice, too. So, you know.
So TriMet does sidewalks?
No, that's a city.
Okay, well, you were throwing it in the mix.
I'm sorry. I'm being an advocate for a moment. You know, there are places along the...
I've lived
places,
in East Portland. Yeah, I've lived in places where we did not have sidewalks or streetlights.
And, you know, the thing is that when we plan investments in buses and such, bus stops, we work with the local jurisdiction to say, look, we're going to put a shelter here. If you want to put a sidewalk here, you want to enhance some of those investments, you want to put a crosswalk here, those sorts of things. So we really leverage those investments for the rider and the community.
We only have a few minutes and many more callers than we have time, and we hope that we will continue this conversation another time and
great.
Invite you
Love
to
it.
Join us again. But in the meantime, let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller.
Hi, my name is Robert, and I have a comment about an experience I had where which led to me avoiding TriMet. I was trying to get home from work in Southwest Portland. I caught the number one at 45th and Gabriel Park, and I got a transfer, and then I stood on Barber Boulevard waiting for the 12. I waited a really long time. I think it just amazed me. I think it may have been 45 minutes for some reason. And then finally I got downtown where I wanted to catch the number 15. I waited for that for a while. I got on, and the driver threw me off. My transfer was like a few minutes over, and she just wouldn't listen to me, and I ended up like walking 50 blocks because she wanted me to pay another fare, which just made me really mad, and I just got off, and it just seemed like at rush hour there should be a little bit of understanding, there should be a little bit of wiggle room there for a person that's worked all day and they're just trying to get home and they're doing exactly what they usually do and it usually works.
But let me just, because we only have a few minutes, just to add on to that in terms of the transfer. They seem to be in somewhat of an arbitrariness in terms of the transfer, in terms of the time.
And the flexibility.
And the flexibilities in terms of how long they last. They last an hour and a half, or is it an hour and a half after you get them on? And then, there's some issues around that.
It's roughly 2 hours in that range. Now, let's say you started your trip, you got a transfer, you have 2 hours from that time to go. So you can actually start your trip. Let's say you have 2 minutes left on your transfer, you hop on your bus to head home, and that transfer is still good. So you just have to get on that vehicle before the end of that transfer time period. It doesn't mean you have to get to your destination by then.
Mm-hmm. So, but sometimes, like when you get a transfer, would you ask the driver, this isn't 2 hours, and could you give
Absolutely.
Me another transfer?
Absolutely, because there's two kind of transfers. There's a sense of it's a two-hour transfer or it's a transfer for a two-zone kind of thing. Let's mm-hmm. say you're traveling all-zone. Maybe they gave you, a two-zone instead of an all-zone transfer. Yeah, feel free to interact with the operator.
Well, we are out of time, but I do want to thank you for coming in, Mary and Carrie, and answering questions for us. And I understand that there's going to be some opportunities for public feedback at public hearings on the transit changes in April. Can you give us the dates and the location really quickly?
April 6th and 7th. It's 5 to 7. Carrie, do you have those details?
One of them is in downtown Portland.
And one's in Oregon City.
Oregon City.
Yeah. And they're on our website. They're at trimet.org.
Great. Thank you so much.
Well, we've been speaking with Representatives Mary and Carrie, and I don't know if you do this tag team a lot.
But I think it's working.
We appreciate you coming and sharing with us this morning. You've been listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil.
My name is Celeste, and we want you to stay tuned to Your Community Connection and be sure to participate and give your input to TriMet about your ridership. Thank you so much for being a part of our KBOO community.